Order, order.
We have got a major pollution problem on our hands. And it needs to be said there are too many cows. We just need to say it, because it's true. The world is finite. There is not infinite capacity to absorb our pollution. There are too many cows. And I think we need to confront that fact and we need to deal with it.
Too many cows and too many pies, both claims arising this week in relation to the environment and obesity, among topics in Question Times, which also took a serve in Russell Norman's valedictory speech on Thursday.
How do you have a proper democracy if you can't access information? Question Time. Let me try to be diplomatic. Lockwood Smith said that a straight question deserves a straight answer. I loved Question Time with Lockwood Smith. It was one of the highlights of my parliamentary career because it was electric. He made ministers answer questions. Question Time was answer time. It is no longer answer time. And I think that is a big problem for our democracy. Because if you can't access information, it doesn't work.
The Greens' former co-leader, retiring after 7 and a bit years as a List MP on the opposition benches, said access to government information was critical to the functioning of a democracy.
In my view, the Official Information Act is relatively moribund now in New Zealand. It is very, very difficult to get information from the government that the government does not wish to release. That is a problem.
And has always been the problem for opposition MPs in Question Times, regardless of the speaker. And Russell Norman's brief obituary for the Official Information Act proved premature earlier on Thursday when Labour's Jacinda Ardern showed that it was still alive and kicking after seeking confirmation of a decline in the rate that police are solving crimes, with this question to their minister.
Does he believe that a decrease in resolution rates had anything to do with the fact that the Southern Police District have 75 fewer frontline police, Wellington 115 fewer, Waikato 58, Waitemata 68, Northland 27 and Southland 45. Has that got anything to do with the decreasing resolution rate?
The Honourable Anne Tolley.
Herself a former Minister of Police, Mrs Tolley was required to answer the question for the current one, Michael Woodhouse.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Police, we'd have to identify whether those figures are accurate.
To which Jacinda Ardern replied,
Point of order, Mr Speaker, I seek leave to table the Official Information Act response from the New Zealand Police confirming the figures I've used in this answer.
Leave us thought to table that particular information. Is there any objection?
There wasn't, but another of Anne Tolley's past ministerial lives. In the education portfolio, when she did away with healthy eating guidelines in schools in 2009, came up in another question from Jacinda Ardern, this time addressed to Health Minister Jonathan Coleman.
Does he agree with his colleague, the Honourable Anne Tolley's statement that children who need, quote, that instant hit of carbohydrates, a pie might not be a bad thing?
Jonathan Coleman said he did agree with Mrs Tolley's views on pies and her abolition of the healthy eating guidelines in schools, drawing another question from Ms Ardern.
Is he now contradicting himself, given that he said in 2005 that, quote, I can show you primary schools where kids have a dollar pie for breakfast from the school tuck shop, then follow up with more of the same for lunch. That's what has to stop.
Yeah. The Honourable Dr Jonathan Coleman.
Well, I don't think there's any contradiction in what I said 10 years ago at all. But the point is, we're not going to be banning pies. We're going to be working with schools, with families, with communities to educate them that actually the odd pie now and then might not be a bad idea.
The minister then got some help from his benchmate, Paula Bennett, who claimed to have some knowledge of the subject.
I might know a thing about pies or two.
Order.
Right. What was Mrs Tolley's full quote on pies and what other reports has he seen on pies recently?
The Honourable Dr Speaker. Jonathan Coleman.
Mrs Tolley's full quote on pies was on Stuff on the 2nd of March 2009. And the full quote was, for the kid who's just been doing 2 hours of rugby practice and needs that instant hit of carbohydrates, a pie might not be a bad thing. I've received another report today in the New Zealand Herald saying, in quotes, if you're wondering what's been fueling the All Blacks' success in the Rugby World Cup, it's pies. The article goes on to say, and this is from the All Blacks, We have a dietitian. We love the pies, and it seems to be working for them. And I suggest to Andrew Little, if he's going to turn up in London and mix with them, he might not want to tell them he doesn't like their diet because they might think he's a bit of a wuss.
Health Minister Jonathan Coleman was joined by his leader, John Key, in taking pot shots at the Leader of the Opposition.
If the member wants me to give eight times that I've stood up for New Zealanders, I'm happy to recite them. But then again, I'm no number eight, and neither is Andrew Little compared to Kieran Reid.
The missing punchline there is in a reference to a preferred Prime Minister poll putting Andrew Little on 8%. Which Mr. Key included in his answers to a couple more questions, including this one from his chief whip, asking his Prime Minister if he has seen any recent reports supporting foreign investment.
The second report called for, get this, more foreign investment in manufacturing and in the regions, and I quote, either state investment, government investment, or foreign direct investment. Yeah, I mean, both should complement each other. That was Andrew Little before he became number eight.
Despite the constant attempts on both sides of the chamber to expose inconsistencies and double standards in their opponents, it's not on to call anyone a hypocrite, and Labour's Phil Twyford paid the price for doing that on Thursday.
Order. Phil Twyford will stand, withdraw and apologise for that remark.
No wonder.
Then he will leave the chamber.
Phil Twyford had called Social Housing Minister Paula Bennett a hypocrite in a cross-chamber spat which included this exchange.
Why does she constantly engage in snide attacks on the most vulnerable citizens when the reality is that under her government there are more Kiwis than ever before living in campgrounds and garages while she leaves 2,000 state houses vacant?
Mr. Speaker.
Honourable Paula Bennett.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I just say look in the mirror, Mr. Snide.
Paula Bennett's Cabinet colleague, Amy Adams, combined in a double act with her Prime Minister on Wednesday to deliver some good news on the crime rates.
Since June 2011, we have achieved a 17% reduction in total crime.
Total crime has fallen by 17.6% since June 2011.
A 39% reduction in youth offending.
Youth crime has fallen by a remarkable 37.3%.
And a 10% reduction in violent offending.
And violent offending has fallen by 9.1%. The Minister of Justice is doing a great job of making our communities safer.
What this means is that fewer New Zealanders are ending up victims of crime under National.
The Minister of Justice and the Prime Minister there using figures collated as part of the government's Better Public Services program in their answers to separate questions on Wednesday, while Environment Minister Nick Smith also had good news in answer to questions on Thursday about the government's response to the Environment Aotearoa report.
We are ramping up efforts with programs like Battle for Our Birds and the War on Weeds. The new Threatened Species Ambassador will also help this work.
That work being in the promotion of biodiversity, although in the area of water quality, Nick Smith rejected criticism implicit in questions from the Green spokeswoman on the environment, Eugenie Sage.
Is the Minister effectively saying that only having rivers which are fit for wading and boating and not for swimming will allow the dairy industry room to expand further?
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Dr.
No, what I am saying is that the Member's proposition that somehow Parliament can pass a rule and magically make every water body in New Zealand safe to swim is false. Even before human beings arrived in this country, there were water bodies that were not safe to swim, and this government is not going to impose regulations and laws that are impractical, as the Green Party would attempt to do.
The Minister for the Environment, Nick Smith, pointing out that some rivers were polluted long before there were too many cows or even people to swim in them. Now for something completely different, goats in the committee rooms with Rhys Lyon.
A petition signed by over 7,000 people calling for a ban on roadside tethering of goats was presented to the Primary Production Committee on Thursday by its sponsor, Tony Robson.
This petition was started as it has disturbed me for some time that this animal is tethered on roadsides around the country and expected to live there for years or even their whole life. As well, there is no regulation for tethering in general, nor provision for social contact. I'd like to point out the goat is the only animal in New Zealand to suffer this inhumane practice of roadside tethering.
and they have been the victim of cruelty and neglect on too many occasions.
Mr. Robson outlined the inhumane nature of goat tethering.
Many of these goats do not have water nor decent shelter, and roadside grass that can be dusty and dirty is not adequate feed for a fastidious natural browser. They do and become easily tangled by the tether, and in some cases have even died from self-strangulation. This is a social herd animal that suffer loneliness and boredom alone on a roadside and are very vulnerable.
The petitioner told the committee that the practice of goat tethering was antiquated.
What purpose does this serve for the animal? It places them in danger and denies them a decent quality of life. This is not an economic issue. It's not a radical proposal. It is merely poor animal welfare practice. And many of my 7,329 fellow petitioners have expressed it is long overdue to be banned.
Tony Robson presenting his petition calling for a ban on the roadside tethering of goats to the Primary Production Committee on Thursday. Meanwhile, a day earlier on Wednesday, two government backbenchers had their members' bills up for consideration by select committees. The first was the Public Collections and Solicitations Disclosure of Payment Bill, which was presented to the Social Services Committee by its sponsor, National's Matt Ducey.
The bill will basically provide that anyone who's collecting donations, signatures or other support for an organisation in a public place and is receiving payment or any other remuneration for engaging in such activity must disclose the existence of this payment or remuneration to relevant members of the public.
Mr. Ducey later fielded criticism from opposition committee members, perplexed that the bill excludes charities from its scope.
What I would challenge you then is it would be interesting to understand how many of those collectors are directly employed by registered charities or by professional fundraising companies. So like you said, your assumption is, but this bill, I suppose, tests that out.
Mr. Ducey also said his bill followed on from overseas examples.
This is just bringing us in line with other international countries. It's been brought in over the years in United States, Australia and the United Kingdom.
National's Matt Ducey presenting his Public Collections and Solicitations Disclosure of Payment Bill to the Social Services Committee. And the other government backbencher to have a bill at Select Committee during the week was Chris Bishop, whose bill was before the Health Committee. It would provide financial assistance to people who altruistically donate kidney or liver tissue for transplant. Speaking in support of the bill was Kidney Health New Zealand Chief Executive Max Reed, who had a simple plea for the committee.
Don't, for goodness sake, leave WINS to administer it. This is not like any other benefit that WINS administers. This isn't about a person being off sick. And in terms of the link to accident compensation, it's not actually about an accident either. This is probably the most intentional act a person will ever make. The whole process is about health, the donors, the transplant recipients, and we would suggest that the mandate and the means to manage the process end to end be given to health.
Kidney Health New Zealand Chief Executive Max Reed with that submission on the financial assistance for live organ donors bill. In total, there were 14 committee meetings held during the week.
That report from East Lyon. While the committees were hearing submissions on those two members' bills, a government bill introduced on Tuesday had its first reading at the earliest opportunity on Thursday. In the name of Gerry Brownlee as the Minister for Canterbury Earthquake Recovery, it replaces the Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Act passed in 2011.
The landscape changed, literally, figuratively, and significantly after the 2011 event, and that it now is a time for the entire Greater Christchurch area, including Waimakariri and Selwyn districts, to regenerate themselves, and this bill, sir, gives them the tools to do that.
Mr Brownlee's Greater Christchurch Regeneration Bill was welcomed by local MPs, including Labour's Ruth Dyson.
Mr Speaker, I just want to first of all advise the Honourable Gerry Brownlee to stay in his seat because he otherwise might fall over. I want to congratulate him for this legislation. I can't recall doing that before. I didn't want him to be standing and collapse in shock.
While supporting the bill's referral to the Local Government and Environment Committee, opposition MPs failed to get the time it'll spend with the committee extended, and it has to be reported back on February the 25th. Also referred to the Privileges Committee by the Speaker, David Carter, was a complaint from the Chairman of the Regulations Review Committee concerning an alleged action taken by Maritime New Zealand in relation to the Managing Director of Maritime Management Services Limited, following evidence that she gave to the Regulations Review Committee. The House adjourned for a week at the end of Russell Norman's valedictory on Thursday afternoon, when the Greens' former co-leader bid farewell to the debating chamber after 7 and a bit years as an MP.
I wanted to start with a little story from Queensland. Some of you may know that I was born in Brisbane, if my accent doesn't give me away. And the thing about Brisbane is that, aside from having a very right-wing Premier for many years, who was very anti-democratic, Joe Bjelke-Petersen, who of course was a Kiwi expat, but I'd never held that against New Zealand. It also had a terrible history of the treatment of Aboriginal people. And after the frontier wars, Aboriginal people were locked up in concentration camps called reservations. And there was a reservation near Cairns called Yarrabah. And in Yarrabah, there was, of course, a lot of conflict between the Aboriginal people of the Yarrabah Reservation and the white overseer, who also owned the store and sold rancid meat, amongst many other things. And their conflict developed between Percy Neal, who was a leader of the Yarrabah community, and the white overseer. And Percy Neal, in this argument, spat on the door, the screen door that separated the two of them. And for this, he was charged with assault and put before a magistrate. And the magistrate said he was an agitator. He said Mr. Neal was an agitator, and the magistrate sentenced him to 2 months' jail with hard labour for spitting on this screen door. He appealed to the Queensland Supreme Court, which in an act of injustice increased that penalty to 6 months' hard labour for spitting on this screen door. Eventually, the appeal went to the High Court in Canberra, the highest court in Australia, and was heard in front of Justice Lionel Murphy. Now, the thing about Lionel was that he was a little bit of an agitator himself, and was appointed by the Whitlam government onto the High Court of Australia. Lionel wrote a judgment about this case, in which, and I just want to quote a little bit of Lionel Murphy's judgment. He said that, and I'm quoting from Justice Murphy, that Mr. Neal was an agitator or stirrer in the magistrate's view, obviously contributed to the severe penalty. If he is an agitator, he is in good company. Many of the great religious and political figures of history have been agitators, and human progress owes much to the efforts of these and many who are unknown. As Oscar Wilde aptly pointed out, agitators are a set of interfering, meddling people who come down to some perfectly contented class of the community and sow seeds of discontent amongst them. That is the reason why agitators are so absolutely necessary. Without them, there would be no advance towards civilisation. And Lionel Murphy finished with a very famous quote where he said, "Mr. Neal is entitled to be an agitator." Now, I use this quote to tell a little bit about my story about Queensland and the growing up in Queensland, but it's also about the value of activists and agitators, people who challenge the status quo, and people who have the courage to stand up against the established order and try to win other people to those ideas, because I believe that activists and agitators have a critical role in human progress, and I've been very proud to call myself amongst one of them, one of the many. The other reason I bring it up is that democracy itself is never absolutely secure nor finished. And Joe Bjelke-Petersen was a deeply anti-democratic figure. And I believe that democracy is a lot more than voting once every 3 years. In fact, I think in some ways that's the least part of it. It's all the institutions and culture that sit around it. And I want to use my remarks to voice my concern about the state of democracy in New Zealand. Now, democracy is not a black and white thing. There's gradations of democracy. I mean, Putin has elections once every several years or whatever. That does not make Russia a democracy. And some of the institutions I think we should be deeply concerned about. Access to information, and government information in particular, is critical to the functioning of a democracy. In my view, the Official Information Act is relatively moribund now in New Zealand. It is very, very difficult to get information from the government that the government does not wish to release. That is a problem. The Jane Kelsey case recently where the High Court found against Tim Grosser, and the Chief Ombudsman, shamefully, supported Tim Grosser in this illegal activity under the Official Information Act of suppressing information. I think we've got a problem with access to information in this country, and that is a critical part of our democracy. Written questions, it is very difficult to get written parliamentary questions answered anymore. It is hard to get straight answers. How do you have a proper democracy if you can't access information? Question time. Let me try to be diplomatic. Lockwood Smith said that a straight question deserves a straight answer. I loved question time with Lockwood Smith. It was one of the highlights of my parliamentary career because it was electric. He made ministers answer questions. Question time was answer time. It is no longer answer time. And I think that is a big problem for our democracy. Because if you can't access information, it doesn't work. The second institution that I think really matters is the media, the fourth estate. Now, this isn't a complaint about a status quo bias to the media. Sure, the media does have a status quo bias. Media institutions are large financial institutions existing in the status quo. No one should be surprised that they tend to have a bias towards the status quo. That's not my gripe. My gripe is the resources available to journalists. Journalists used to have to produce one or two stories a week in some cases. Now they have to produce four a day. It's very difficult for journalists to do their role in our society, to hold government and powerful institutions to account when journalists don't have the resources to do their job. I think this is a problem for all of us, and I think it's a problem for our democracy. I also think we have developed a bad culture around dissent. When you look at what happened to Eleanor Catton, when you look at what happened to Nicky Hager, what he's currently going through after the police raided his house because he dared to criticise and get involved in, of course, the Cameron Slater issue, one of the government's favourites. There is a bad culture around dissent, in my opinion, and it makes it difficult for people to speak out. The culture that exists matters in a democracy, whether we have a real democracy or not. That's important. And finally, there's the ISDS stuff, Investor State Dispute Settlements Clauses. These are about placing restrictions on democratically elected governments. That's why they exist. So I would say we can fix this. Democracy is an evolving institution. It's a living institution. But it will take a concerted effort from civil society groups and those outside of this institution, I suspect, as much as those within it, in order to improve make our democracy healthier than it currently is. And that's the first thing I wanted to say. The second thing I wanted to say was around sustainability. Pardon me, I've got the lurgy. The finite resources, I think, is one of the key insights that the Green Movement brings to the world, the small g Green Movement brought to the world. That is, resources are limited, the ability of the planet to absorb our pollution is relatively limited. And there is a connection between democracy and sustainability, and that connection became apparent in what happened to Environment Canterbury. The reason why the elected councillors were removed from Environment Canterbury was because the people of Canterbury started to vote for councillors who wanted to restrict the dairy sector. It's as simple as that. And that's been stated pretty publicly by the Agriculture Minister at the time. Now, that, in my opinion, is very problematic. Because in order to protect our democracy, in order to protect our environment, we need a functioning democracy. This is really important, and I think that was a classic illustration of it. But there's a bigger problem, and this came out in the environment report that was released yesterday, and that is around dairy intensification. We need to confront the fact that we have got a big problem now. It's been growing for probably 15, 20 years, but it is now an astronomically large problem around dairy intensification. It's causing massive climate change emissions, water pollution, water abstraction, compacted soil, as the Environment Aotearoa report said, biodiversity loss, polluted aquifers. When you think about the fact that if you take water from the Canterbury Aquifer, parts of the Canterbury Aquifer, and feed it to infants, that water is so polluted those infants will die, and the Medical Officer of Health has said this in Canterbury, that should be a wake-up call that we have got a major pollution problem on our hands. And it needs to be said there are too many cows. We just need to say it, because it's true. The world is finite. There is not infinite capacity to absorb our pollution. There are too many cows. And I think we need to confront that fact and we need to deal with it if we're going to clean up our environment. Now, one of the great things about my job is I got to, I went on this Dirty Rivers tour, you know, I went and paddled all the lots of dirty rivers, dozens of them, not hard to find. And there's communities all around the country which are trying to protect their rivers, and courageous people in rural communities who are speaking out about the impact of dairy intensification on their rivers and their communities. And we need to listen to the voices of those people. And I don't think leadership is going to come from government, and I don't think it's going to come from the industry, because there has been plenty of time to fix this problem, and it's not getting any better. It's getting radically worse. And it's going to rely, I think, on the NGO sector and the community sector in order to speak out to save our rivers and to protect the natural environment of New Zealand, not to mention the climate change emissions that are coming out of the agriculture sector, because, of course, the agricultural sector doesn't face a price on its greenhouse emissions. So what would you expect? The third thing I just want to touch on briefly is about justice and inequality and poverty. I mean, we've said it 100 times, but it's got to be said. There is too much poverty and inequality in New Zealand. I mean, things got worse after the New Right reforms. And so, you know, the Gini coefficient got worse after the 80s reforms and 90s reforms. But they haven't really gotten any better. And that is a major problem. Now, people say the government can't do everything. Well, that's true. I mean, the government can't mend a broken heart. But the government can fill an empty stomach. That is within our capacity. We can do those things. And I think we should. And I think we have a moral obligation to deal with the issues around poverty and inequality. Honestly, I think it strikes to the very heart of our democracy as well. Because when you sit in a society which is highly stratified and you look below you and you think, goodness me, that could be me. If I speak out, if I do the wrong thing, if I lose my job, I can't pay the mortgage, feed the kids, that could be me next. It makes everyone very frightened and on edge, and it does not give the peace of mind and the stability that a mature democracy needs, in my belief. I'd like to give a few thanks in my closing remarks. Firstly, I'd like to thank my partner, Katja Paquin. Katja has not only been a tremendous personal support to me, but also a real political support as well. Before, Katja used to be the political director for the Green Party, before she got a much more important job, which is looking after our three beautiful kids, Ty, Frankie and Stella. And aside from doing a fantastic job bringing up those beautiful kids, Katja's been a key political support for me and has provided me with enormous insight into politics. To Tig, Frankie and Stella, I'd just like to say you've changed me in ways that I never expected, as having kids does to you. But it was only possible, really, to bring up those kids because of the community we lived in. And I'd like to thank the people at Play Centre and at Kindy, and I'd like to thank Katja's mum, Mary, who's been very, very supportive of us, and also my mum, Ollie May. My mum was one of those people who was very disrespectful to authority, still is. And I suspect that was very, very helpful. And because I do think that you need to be very... Those in power often have a vested interest to tell you lies. It's true. It is just true. And so I think it's very important that people look at people in power and don't believe everything they say. And they take it with a grain of salt and they think for themselves, because the people in power aren't always going to tell you the truth. I'd just like to say... My view is that humanity faces some really big challenges in the decades ahead, particularly around sustainability and climate change, but also about inequality and poverty, but also about democracy. I think democracy faces some big challenges globally, actually. But we also have, like, huge opportunities. So, you know, while I say that the world is finite, that's true. But human creativity is infinite. Human generosity is infinite. Human courage is infinite. And so we have access to some fantastic resources, as well as facing these big challenges and problems we've inherited from the past. We've also inherited lots of great things from the past as well. And we have the opportunity to really create a world of abundance for everyone and for all of us living within the finite limits of the natural world. And I think that it's an opportunity that we really should grasp with both our hands, because our children deserve nothing less. Finally, I'd like to dedicate my time here to the people who stand up for a better world, regardless of the costs. We are all entitled to be agitators, as Justice Murphy said, and we should exercise that entitlement frequently, and I intend to do so. Kia kaha.
The Greens' Russell Norman delivering his valedictory on Thursday afternoon. His seat will be filled by Marama Davidson, coming off the Greens' list, and she'll deliver her maiden speech on Wednesday, November the 4th, after the House returns next Tuesday. I'm Tom Frewen, and this program was made with funding from Parliament.